For you today, you have Senate Bill, actually Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 21, which deals with the problems that we experienced in Ferguson last year. And I just want to tell a story, if you allow, because this is a story that is going to be in history books from this point on, and just begin with how everything started. On August 9th, I received a phone call from a legislator from St. Louis City who said, you need to get up to Ferguson as soon as possible. There's something that's going on. This legislator called about 16 times, and that doesn't happen. We know that when we get multiple phone calls, something is happening. And I ended up going to a street called Canfield. I had not been there before, even though I walked the district to run for office. I had not been at the street called Canfield. And there are literally hundreds of people who were standing around who had witnessed a young man who had been shot. And they saw a body for about 4.5 hours laying on the ground with blood. And that was the very beginning of what we term as Ferguson. Not just a place, but the experience, Ferguson. There are several different things that happened after that day. And, you know, I can begin on August 11th when I was out with my constituents. There were a lot of people who were out. Some of you may know some of the folks who were out on the streets and trying to figure out what they were going to do and how they were going to approach the situation of someone who was unarmed and who was killed by an officer. On August 11th, I was in a couple of different places. We term a Ground Zero 1 and a Ground Zero 2. Our Ground Zero 2, from the very beginning, had been the police station where people would never leave. Ground Zero 1 is the Canfield neighborhood, the West Florissant neighborhood. And in the early evening, late afternoon, I was at Ground Zero number 2. And I was with about 100, 150 young people who lived in these apartments. And it's right, the specific street, it's called North Winds Estates. I was with my intern, and I was with a very young minister who had been out in the streets that day. I wanted to make sure that all of my constituents, especially the young people, stayed on the sidewalks, because that is part of their responsibility. When you protest, you have to be in a peaceful assembly. You could not be on private property unless allowed to be on that private property. And so I took on the responsibility of being that elected official who was on the ground saying, let's abide by the rules. Let's make sure we stay on the public sidewalks. It was totally peaceful. Nothing was happening that was dangerous. I felt comfortable, and I will tell you, you guys usually know me as a fearless person, but anytime there's danger around, I will go quickly. So I had not known that North Winds Estates was a one-way street, and I told my intern, and I told the young minister that I was with, if there's anything that happens, let's leave quickly. Let's just go. And that is the directive that I gave, let's go. And y'all know that I've been exercising, so it's not like I was going to walk slowly. I was going to run to my car. And I was running to my car that night, that afternoon. And so what happened, we looked back, there was a gas station that had been burned by looters a couple of days before, the day before, actually. And we saw police officers going into their bags and taking out masks. And I said, we need to go. We had not been tear gassed. This is the first day of tear gassing. And it's not like this is an experience that most people have. As I have told many people, I've been in Iraq. I've been in Baghdad. I've been in a bunker. I've been fired at by militants in Iraq. And the experience that my constituents had, not only on August 11th, but days after that, was nothing like the experience that I had when I was in Baghdad. Nothing like that experience. And so by the time I got to my car, which was right behind a yellow auto building, which is behind the QT that was burned, we had already been fired at. So we have video of highway patrol saying, please disperse, please disperse. Remind you, this is a peaceful protest. There is absolutely no fighting. There wasn't even cursing going on. And there were a bunch of young people who were right on the side street, one-way street. So for the next 4 hours, next 3 hours, I'm in my car with my intern on a one-way street, and I couldn't leave. 150 young people, some of them lived in that neighborhood, and they were able to go into their apartments. And people who parked their cars on this one-way street, such as myself and the young minister that I was with, endured not only rubber bullets, wood bullets, but tear gassing for 3 long hours. For 3 hours. And I didn't understand why that happened on this day. I'm very cautious, as I said prior. Anything ever happening, we were going to leave. Anything, period. I didn't understand. There was a woman, a pregnant woman, 6 months pregnant, who was forced face down on the ground trying to get out of a one-way street. And a police officer, said, get down on the ground while we are being tear gassed. There are helicopters that were above us that said, get into your apartments. But if you didn't live in that neighborhood, you didn't have an apartment. I didn't live in that neighborhood. My intern didn't live in that neighborhood. The pastor that I was with didn't live in that neighborhood. Anyone who tried to get out of that one-way street, to get out of the situation, was fired at. Anyone who tried to leave was fired at.
When you say they were fired at, what you specifically?
Rubber bullets, okay. Wooden bullets.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. And so it ended up being, I meant to have my assistant take a copy of this, but I'm talking to Senator Schmidt. We're texting back and forth that night, and it was about 8:53 that evening. And Senator Schmidt is looking at my Twitter messages that I'm leaving, and he's concerned about my safety and my well-being. I'm also talking to a Coast Guardsman who happens to be a good friend of mine who I went to high school with. And the message while I was being tear gassed is this from Senator Schmidt. I know you want to do the right thing, but more than anything, you are my friend. Be careful tonight. And I responded, I can't breathe. And he said, take care of yourself. He said, I'm your Senate big bro, and I'm asking you to be careful. And I responded to him, police won't let us out of a one-way street. That last one was 8:53. We had been there for a long time. And when we were able to leave, we were scared to leave. Every time I kept moving my car towards West Florissant to get out, I thought they were going to shoot. The police were going to shoot at us again. And I went through this back and forth about 3 or 4 times. You know, should I move forward? Should I not move forward? Because I knew that if you're going to force a six-month pregnant woman down to the ground in the middle of tear gas, then you can probably do something to me too. And so finally, about 10 o'clock at night, we were able to get off of North Winds Estates and make a left going towards Chambers Road on West Florissant. And then all of a sudden, there's a standstill. We probably get maybe 40 feet outside of the street that we were on, North Winds Estates, and then we were stopped again, and there was a shooting, and there literally was gunfire going right past us, and I'm ducking down in my car, you know, trying to duck down as much as possible, and police are shooting at a woman who is on her own property. That woman ended up being shot at Yes.
Okay, you're saying shot at again. Can you...
Well, that was a gun.
That was a gun?
Yeah, that was a gun.
Okay.
And so, I think it was a gun.
I'm just trying to stay with you.
She ended up having to go to the hospital, and she had injuries, obviously, because she was hit. And anyway, that was August 11th. But this experience happened on August 12th, August 13th, August 14th, and it continued for weeks. And there's a case that ended up being in St. Louis County Court, Abdullah versus St. Louis County. And in that, there were constituents of mine who were peacefully protesting. In this time period, one of the things that I wanted to make sure of is that people were following the law. They stayed on public property. They did not get on private property unless that business owner allowed for that to happen. And there were rules that were created, arbitrary rules, which were struck down by the court. And Abdullah versus St. Louis County is one of them, where people were peacefully protesting, and then they were arrested. They were told that we have a five-second rule. You can only stand on public property, peacefully protesting, for 5 seconds. Well, that was determined to be unconstitutional. In fact, if you read this case, and I was reading over it this morning, I had not read it for a while, there was so much mismanagement between the different law enforcement agencies, it's embarrassing. Not only our Highway Patrol, our St. Louis County Police Department, but also Ferguson. It was an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment to read this. We're at meetings in the morning. Different officers were told, we want you to follow this 5-second rule instruction. And then other police officers were told, just do what you think is best. Again, not following the Constitution. You know, I never knew how precious. I knew that our Constitution was precious. But I didn't know what the injury felt like, what it looked like when one of your rights is taken away from you. I have a completely different impression of how people feel about the Second Amendment. And I'm a liberal. And I know there are a lot of folks, we debate gun policy all the time. But I finally understood, for those champions of the Second Amendment, how it feels if someone is trying to take away your right to bear arms. When my right to assemble was taken away from me as a senator, when our highway patrol participated in tear gassing, that injury cannot be compared to many other things, because that Constitution that we have, you don't get to pick and choose who's covered under the Constitution. Every American is protected by our Constitution, and how beautiful that Constitution is that we live by, that we serve under, the way that we communicate. How precious is our Constitution? So that brings me to Senate Bill 21. I'm glad I didn't cry because I have nightmares about this experience. But again, you have Senate Committee Substitute, Senate Bill 21, and there's several provisions that I have in this bill, and I'll just go through them. One of the first things that we deal with in the bill is to make sure when the governor, whoever that may be, when there is an emergency, a state of emergency that is executed, that we have a third party that is around. In my original bill, I said that the governor, the state, should contract with a third party entity. And then, you know, some people had a problem with that, but I thought it was very important that there is an entity that is made aware of in a human disaster that You know, they need to be there, participate, to make sure that not only our constitutional rights are abided by, but our civil rights and our human rights. It has been said that never in the history of the United States have we had to have Amnesty International present. I mean, what does that say? For the first, Amnesty International usually is a global deal. You're in different countries, third world countries, not in Ferguson, Missouri. Again, an embarrassment to the state. To the state. It is an embarrassment to have an international, a global entity, to have to be concerned about the human rights violations that have occurred. I also think it's important for people to have counselors around. When there's a human disaster, there should be counselors. If you're dealing with a school shooting, you have counselors. Whether or not those kids were in the classroom where there was a shooting, or if they're just in the building, you have counselors. You have psychologists. There's an entire community that was looking at a dead body for 4.5 hours, looking at the blood, looking at a lifeless body. No counselors. None. Zero. You're tear gassed. That's not normal to be tear gassed. It is not normal to go through that, especially in a peaceful protest. There are people who could not speak. There's a woman I just saw who had to have surgery in the last week because she couldn't talk. For the first 3 months, there months after being tear gassed, there was this strange thing going on in my throat, and I didn't know why. I thought because I was out on the streets all the time chanting with the people who I represent, but it was actually the tear gas.
Senator, can I interrupt you just for a second? For those that's in the room today, you will see senators coming in and out. The reason why we have, as a senator here knows, that everybody has lots of different types of committees, and they have to kind of go back and forth. So it's not that they're not interested in anybody's testimony or the senators. She understands that. So I just want to make sure the rest of the folks here in the room understand that.
That's absolutely correct. Thank you for that.
So do not take that when someone leaves that they're not interested in anybody's testimony, including the senator here or anybody on this committee. So I just want to make sure everybody knows that.
Thank you so much for that.
Go ahead and proceed.
Thank you. Under the section that deals with use of force, what we are trying to do is to align our policy, our statutes, to the Tennessee versus Gardner case. And really what that case outlines, and if you don't have a copy of that opinion, which I do believe is from 1984, it deals with if there is a present danger where someone has a gun, where someone is trying to manipulate a police officer, then you have every right to use deadly force. But when you're not in a clear present danger of being harmed, as in the case after the interaction with Michael Brown and Officer Wilson being 35 feet away, deadly force is not supported under the Constitution. So, I mean, I really wanted to make sure that we align ourselves with what the Supreme Court has put in place, and that's what I'm trying to do via Tennessee versus Gardner. One of the biggest issues that we have in St. Louis County, going to the next issue in this bill, I'm on page 6, and at the bottom of it, and the section that I'm referring to deals with the special prosecuting attorney. For a very long time, there's been a huge distrust of our prosecuting attorney in the state. I'm not in the state, but in St. Louis County. And a lot of my constituents, and they look like everything, have had an issue with our prosecuting attorney because of how he has handled certain cases. So in this Senate committee substitute, when there is an individual who is killed by an officer with a handgun and who is also unarmed, that case would go to a special prosecuting attorney. The next section of the bill The deadly force is pretty long, but the next section of the bill, I'm on page 8, deals with the accreditation of police departments. There are actually multiple accreditation standards that are out there. I am in discussions with my chiefs of police. I'm learning more about the accreditation processes. And so this section is still something that I'm working on. But what's interesting is that the only commonality that I think this bill has with Senate Bill 5 is you will see that the police departments that don't have a good standard of accreditation are also the same police departments that are targeting individuals as they drive. So I just wanted to make that very clear. When you look at how a police department, this is St. Louis, I can't speak for the state, but I represent 41 municipalities, and I do ride-alongs on a frequent basis, so I think I can speak with authority on this one. And I didn't know this before I started meeting with my chiefs. Some of those departments, again, that have an issue with targeting people and ticketing folks to, you know, an extent that is just unfair, are the same ones who have the most limited accreditation policy. Body cameras, which is a big deal we've been talking about nationally. It's a huge conversation. I believe that body cameras not only protect police officers, but they also protect someone who may be in a situation like this. You know, I have been in a police car when there is a person who was stopped for doing something unlawful. And there are cameras in the car in St. Louis City. There are at least two or three cameras in the car. There's audio that's available. So if you are a prisoner or someone who's being detained in the car, you have video. A situation that Senator Nasheed and I were in, there was a person who was stopped who ran a red light, who ended up having drugs on their person, and there was video and audio. And if you asked for that video or audio, you could have gotten it. That person could not defend themselves. They couldn't say, I'm sorry, I didn't have a bag of marijuana, because we saw, we smelled, and we heard that this person had a bag of marijuana. If there was no camera, we would not be able to know what was actually going on. And so in that situation, the police officer is protected from what they did. But in a situation like this, where we're dealing with Michael Brown and there is no body camera, we want to know the truth about what happened. A lot of the way people feel right now, especially after the Eric Garner case in New York, there was a camera, there was video, there was a law that said that you couldn't choke hold. It existed, and, you know, even though there's still no conviction there, you know, I think this is a protection. Now, in the fiscal note, you know, a lot of folks made a big deal about the amount of money that is that local municipalities, police departments would have to pay. And I do know, just to go there, I do know that federally there is an effort to put $75 million into ensuring that police departments around the nation have body cameras. But I will also say, if you care so much about the cost, and there's some people who are willing to say that, what is the cost to the state when another Ferguson happens? And all that trade we talk about, all the business opportunities, all the conventions, the number of kids, international students who have refused to come back to St. Louis because of Ferguson. Ferguson is not a St. Louis issue. It's not just a Kansas City issue. It is an issue that will impair the entire state and our revenue. For us not to move forward would be a huge mistake for our revenue, if that's what you care about. If that's the bottom line, can we really afford any more of these Michael Brown cases? And I think that we can't. But I support body cameras, however we can pay for them. Let's do it. And I think that's important. It's good for the community, and it's good for police officers who are doing their job. There is an exception that's in this language. Again, as I have talked to several different police agencies and individuals, it's the Section 3 for detectives and other law enforcement officers who are working undercover. They would not have to wear a video camera. I have friends who work undercover who obviously are police officers, and I would not want to put them in any further danger than they already are in upholding our law and making sure that our communities are safe. I also define...
Can I interrupt you a second? I missed some of that. You say you would not be in favor of undercover officers having to...
have a video camera. Yeah.
You're not in favor of that, right?
No. Okay. That's why it's an exemption.
I just want to make sure I heard you properly.
It's an exception.
Okay. Where are you at again? What
I'm on page 8.
Okay.
I'm in 590.709.
Okay, I got you.
Okay.
I'm back with you again.
All right. So that would be an exception. We also have to deal with the sunshine provisions. This is in part a recommendation from the Attorney General, in part recommendations from different groups of people who have a concern about the sunshine provision that we did not have. I just wanted to make sure that those who wanted to receive video of a situation between a police officer and whoever they're dealing with has standing in the case. So there are only three ways that you can get this video. And one way, and I'm on page 10, I'm sorry, I'm skipping. One way is an order of the court. You can do a request if you appear in the recording. And then if you have a civilian review board, you can also request the video of an incident. Going back to page 9, I want to make this very, very clear. I wanted to define protest. And I looked up several cases to better define what a protest is. In no way or form do I support people who are cursing, who are assaulting police officers. So I wanted to define what a protest is. And the way that I was able to do that is I found this case, which I referred to earlier, the Abdullah versus St. Louis County, and in the judge's opinion, it defines what a lawful protest is. And so anyone who is participating in an unlawful protest, you know, all rules apply. But if you are like many of my constituents who I stood next to day after day in the blistering sun, and you're on public property and you are covered under the Constitution, I want to make sure that you are covered under this policy if you are a peaceful protester. And that gets into some of the other provisions. There is a woman, and I've referred to this a few times, who was hogtied, pregnant, unconscious, and then kicked by police. I have the video. Hogtied, upside down, unconscious, pregnant, and then kicked while she's unconscious by police officers. So no hogtying. The next section of this bill, I wanted, going back to the video cameras, I did not want to mandate that municipal police departments keep their video more than 2 years. I just, whatever is convenient for them, I want them to deal with that how they see fit. In St. Louis City, they have a requirement of 30 days. They keep their video for 30 days and it goes away. But I did not want to make any mandates in that, and so they would have discretion over how long they keep policy. So again, I know I have a couple of witnesses who are here who I've worked with, who I've helped out, who I protested with. And again, we're in a place as a state, this is not just a St. Louis problem. A lot of people want to say this is just a St. Louis problem. It's not a St. Louis problem. It is a Missouri problem. And if business and conventions don't want to come to the state of Missouri, that's going to impact all of us. And again, I don't want there to be another situation where there is a person who has the benefit of due process and does not receive it. I don't want an unarmed person to be judged by one person who is the judge, jury, and executioner. The Constitution protects every individual regardless of what crime they had. Darren Wilson was able to be covered under due process. Mike Brown was not able to be covered by due process, and he was unarmed. And if this happens again, what I'm scared of, and what you should be scared of too, if this happens again, not only did the world look at the state of Missouri and look at St. Louis, but if this happens again, and St. Louis is situated, Missouri is situated the way it is, it's going to be a further embarrassment. You know, there are people who are out there on both sides, police officers who were scared, protesters who were scared. You know, we need to understand, you know, digressing for just a moment, and I think, Senator, you heard what I said in the Education Committee, for all parties, the way people responded, for all parties, police included, protesters included, is totally indicative of the level of education they get. And yes, it was hard when I saw my friends who were police officers who were on the other side, Officer Lane. He's one of my favorite police officers who works for St. Louis County. Like, he's the guy who I want to make a cake for and deliver it for Christmas. You know, and he's having to be on the other side. And I'm holding young people back who want to just attack. You know, it's a scary feeling to be there, to have friends who are in law enforcement. But then I have to uphold the Constitution of this state and of this country and protect my citizens the best way I can. And so I just want there to be an out. I want my constituents who don't know the law to have confidence in this beautiful democracy that we have. I want them to know what their rights are so that they can abide by them. I want them to have confidence in what we do as legislators every single day. What I have to hear every day is that the system fails. The system fails. The system fails. The system fails. It's what I go home to listening. The system fails. The system fails. I want to show my constituents that the system does not fail. It does not fail. We have to have the same amount of faith that I do. They have to have the same amount of faith that I do in what we do every single day in this building. I've seen changes. I believe that changes can happen. And I just want this committee to open up their hearts and realize that we are in this together. We go down to St. Louis, y'all go down where you're from. We go down, y'all go down. Not the same way, but it's going to impact our revenue in this state. $12 million we spent. We should put $12 million in education in unaccredited school districts so people know what their constitutional rights are. That's what we should be doing. I thank you for the opportunity, and I'm sure that there are witnesses who are here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.